Chapter 7. Revelations. Nights. Black Sky. There were cities beneath the imperial palace that few would ever see. Some were made of labyrinthine passageways, arcades and atria that led into the heart of the earth, towards prohibited zones where only the Adeptus Custodes, the Silent Sisters and the Emperor himself could venture. Others were the overbuilt remains of the first living complexes constructed in this place, great forests of stone pillars carved by intelligent machine artisans during the reign of the Iron Men. Garrow's destination was elsewhere, however. He arrived in a cavernous space 300 meters below the palace proper, a yawning abyss that resembled the inside of a gigantic beehive. Each compartment along the inner surface of the void was a prison cell, and like the defences of the White Mountain, they were shrouded by devices of ancient and intricate design, built to limit the powers of the unnatural and the unearthly. Almost all the cells were empty, their adamantium doors hanging open in the moist, blood-warm air. Those few that were occupied held captives of a particular kind, men and women who were too valuable to be executed and too dangerous to be sent beyond the immediate reach of the Emperor of Man and the Regent of Terror. Garrow rode a servitor skimmer past the sealed cells and wondered who he would find within if he chose one at random and opened it.
"Each one of these chambers holds another of Malkador's secrets," he thought. "Or worse than that, perhaps they are confinement for his mistakes."
Presently he alighted from the skimmer before a cell door on the 7th tier, much to the shock and surprise of the guards standing watch there.
You're not supposed to come down here,"
said one of them. Garrow paid the statement no heed and surveyed the pair. Both men were in the grey of the Chosen, and they had an encampment of sorts set up on the wide catwalk, exhibiting ample evidence that they had been there for a long time. On a small folding table, Garrow saw what looked like a roughly made book of plas paper, lying open to show pages of dense red text.
"Sir Knight,"
the other man said hopefully,
"are we relieved?"
Garrow shook his head and advanced to the adamantium door, leaning forward so the sensor mounted within could read the mark of the sigillite etched into his armour.
"We're not told anything," said the first soldier. "How goes the war, my lord?"
The cell door unlocked, and Garrow gave the men a look before he stepped inside.
"When it gets here, you will know."
"The Emperor protects,"
said the soldier, clinging to the words as if they were an inviolate shield. The door clanked shut behind him, and Garrow took in the space. The cell was larger than he had expected, and curiously decorated with an eye towards the homely. A heavy blanket bisected the chamber, and as he took a step into the room, it rose to allow a slight and unassuming figure, a pale-skinned blonde woman in a simple shift dress, to pass around.
"Nathaniel, hello again."
Euphrati Keeler gave him a nod of welcome, and she smiled warmly, genuinely pleased to see him there. The moment was so ordinary it was incongruous. Garrow found the same emotion pulling at the corner of his frown.
"Saint,"
he replied, bowing slightly. Keeler made a rude noise.
"Now don't call me that. It makes you sound like Kirill. He's always doting on me with that word. What do you wish, Saint? How may I aid you, Saint?"
She sighed.
"He has a good heart, but he can be trying sometimes."
"Where is your iterator?"
Garrow looked around, seeing a sleeping pallet in one corner and ephemera about it that might have belonged to the old man. He felt a momentary flash of concern. The last time he had spoken with Kirill Sinderman on the Aetropolis platform Hesperides, he had sensed the weight of ages in him.
"Is he well?"
"Kirill comes to visit me on occasion, but he spends most of his days carrying the word to those who wish to hear it. He is my conduit to the galaxy, beyond the walls of the fortress."
Garrow raised an eyebrow, wondering how it was possible for an elderly human with no training and no combat prowess to move freely through the most secure complex on Terra without raising some kind of notice. The woman walked to a wine jug and poured cups for both of them.
"We have a lot of friends," she said,
answering the unspoken question.
"More even than Malkador knows, I think."
"The Sigilite turns a blind eye to it."
"What he doesn't understand, he doesn't see."
She handed Garrow a cup and he took it. The drinking vessel was tiny in his hand, like a child's miniature in the palm of an adult.
"But let me assuage your concern, Nathaniel. Kirill is better than he was. Stronger."
"Did you help with that?"
Keeler gave a slight shrug.
"I think he thrives on challenging times. As long as he has something of import to say, I believe he'll outlive all of us."
"Pity he's not here," said Garrow, meaning it. "I would have liked to see him again."
"I'm sure you will."
Keeler took a careful sip of wine.
"But you came here for me."
"Aye."
She shook her head and reached out, placing a hand on his vambrace. That radiant smile of hers shimmered just out of sight.
"We've been here before, Nathaniel. Each time the question sounds loudly in your thoughts, you seek me out. But you should know by now. I can only tell you what you already know."
He smiled.
"That may be so, but I enjoy our conversations."
Garrow looked upon this slight and unassuming woman, and wondered by what quirk of fate she had become what she was now. Euphrates Keeler, once a remembrancer with the fleets of the Great Crusade, carrying her Picta into the unknown in order to document humanity's campaign, to reunite all Terra's disparate children and beat back the encroaching tide of alien influence beyond. That ordinary identity, that unremarkable destiny, had been obliterated by the events put in motion by the War Master's insurrection. Something greater than all of them, Horus, Garrow, Keeler herself, had been unlocked in those early turbulent days. The woman had been forever changed, becoming a conduit for a higher power. Euphrates Keeler, the artist and commoner, had become Euphrates Keeler, saint and hallowed soul. She returned his smile.
"We are a strange pair, you and I. Both of us reborn in the same transformative fire."
"Both on the same path."
Keeler cocked her head.
"It will be your hand that sees me set to freedom."
She had said those words to him once before.
"It will be your sword that holds fast my safety. But not today."
She let her hand drop and stepped away.
"You're too early. It is not time."
He put down the untouched wine cup.
"The War Master is close. You must know that. His forces advance on Sol even as we speak."
"Horus has always been close," she countered. "It's not a matter of crude distance. He's here, right now, in the walls of this place, in every hive city and settlement, everywhere a slow knife glitters and the wings of black flies rasp."
Keeler gestured at the cell around them.
"Be thankful you don't have the eyes with which to see."
"All the more reason to get you away from here."
Garrow felt himself falling towards an old and familiar argument once more.
"Horus isn't the one you are concerned about," said Keeler,
cutting down his next words before he uttered them.
"It is your gene sire who haunts you."
"Aye."
It took Garrow a moment to allow himself to admit it. Before the saint, there was no point denying anything.
"Mortarion has changed."
The warmth and light in Keeler's face faded, and she became solemn.
"In ways you cannot imagine."
Garrow thought of the warped creatures he had first seen on the Eisenstein, and then several times since. His old rival Grulgor, and the abhorrent Lord of Flies.
"Will I face my Primarch again?"
Garrow was suddenly aware of the weight of his weapons, his sword and his paragon bolter hanging heavy from his battleplate.
"What would you do if you did?"
Her hand went to her mouth, as if she wanted to shroud the question from the world.
"Do you believe that you could stop Mortarion? Kill him? Redeem him?"
"I have to try. I am sworn to you, and if you ask it, I will turn away from any confrontation. But
you wish it,"
she said, and he nodded. After a long moment, Keeler spoke again.
You look to me, Nathaniel. You look to the words of the Lectitio Divinitatis and the God Emperor himself for guidance. But in truth, you have never needed to find it in any of those places.
She walked back towards the far end of the cell.
You've always known what to do, my captain. Trust your instincts.
Garrow raised his hand, words forming on his lips, but before he could utter them, a tone sounded from the vox speed in the neck ring of his armour.
Argentia Primus, said a mechanical voice. The Sigillite summons you to the Hall of the Ages with all due alacrity.
Malkador will be annoyed if you disobey him again.
Keeler showed that radiant smile once more as she ducked under the makeshift curtain.
Don't worry, Nathaniel. We will see each other once more before the end.
Loken was at the back of the group as the loose pack of knights-errant strode into the tall, brightly lit chamber. It resembled the cathedrals of antiquity, all high arches and fluted stone columns supporting a vaulted ceiling. But unlike those buildings, the Hall of the Ages had no walls. In each arch, where a place of pious worship might have sported chancels and great stained glass windows of devotional art, there were ever-moving panes of holographic imagery. The three-dimensional projections showed renderings of events from the history of the Imperium. Loken saw the volcanic obliteration of Ixland from the Wars of Reunification on one side, and across the way the fall of the Hadian Spire in all its gore-spattered glory. He resisted the temptation to stand a while and watch the projections loop through their short moments of theatre. Each was scaled to true size, so that an observer could walk amid the instants side by side with war engines and thunder warriors to capture some sense of what it might have been like to be there. He wondered if, after all this was over, some hollow artist would commemorate the insurrection in the same way.
Or will this era be so shameful that we forever turn our faces from it?
The thought brought a chill to him, abetted by the cold breeze coming through the arches. The Hall of Ages was high up on the eastern ranges of the palace, high enough that a human would need a heat cloak if they strayed too far from the invisible thermal fields in the middle of the chamber. Loken's attention drifted from the gigantic hololiths to pass over the last few knights-errant gathering in the hall. Those he did not know drew his gaze once again, and he couldn't help but allow his martial nature to come to the fore. He analysed them automatically, as if they were potential enemies. Which ones moved with the telltale motion of a legionary with an augmetic limb? Which gravitated towards the comfort of the shadows? Which stood boldly in the centre of the chamber, eschewing the merest suggestion of concealment? Once, to look upon a fellow space marine and consider how one might be called upon to kill him was a fanciful idea, a notion bordering on crass and discreditable.
How things have changed for the worst, Loken thought grimly.
On the way here, it had been impossible to miss the surge in activity taking place throughout the palace's domains. Troops of Chosen jogged past the knights errant, bearing weapons and equipment towards strongpoints, and flyers darted around in the hazy sky. Snatching surreptitious looks where he could, Loken spotted the bright yellow of Imperial fist colours down on the lower tiers, as heavy tanks and companies of Dawn's legionaries deployed to their battle stations. The silent, crackling energy of warfare to come threaded through the air, and if Loken was honest with himself, the dread he felt at knowing Horus's arrival was imminent was tempered by a fierce kind of excitement. And perhaps there was relief, too. One way or another, the war was going to end on Terra's shores, and after long years of enduring this bloody, horrific revolt, Loken was ready for it to happen. In battle, there was always clarity. He looked into the sky, past the ghostly shapes of the few remaining suborbital plates, sighting the pale disk of Luna. The moon had been turned into a hardened strongpoint, her defences augmented with combat flotillas, automated systems and defensive grids. Further out, towards the ranges of the asteroid belt and afar, he He imagined battle preparations already underway. Some stations and war platforms had already gone vox silent, locking down and preparing for the worst of fates.
What did the long-range scry sensors see out there? He wondered. What great terrors has the War Master held in reserve, saving them to be unleashed on this day?
That question will be answered soon enough. Rubio moved up to stand by his side.
I didn't speak it aloud.
Loken shot him a hard glare. Well, in here your thoughts are as loud as gunshots, replied the Psyker. Then he gave Loken a long, measuring look. Have you ever wondered why that is?
Whatever you are implying, Rubio, spit it out. Now is not the time for prolixity.
Rubio tapped his temple.
I think there is a touch of the warp in you.
Did Tormageddon knock something loose in your head, Psyker?
Loken snapped back. His traitorous brother had almost killed Rubio during their mission to the Vengeful Spirit.
Don't insult me.
Far from it.
Although I did have time to think on this whilst I rested in a healing coma.
The other knight-errant raised his hands in a conciliatory gesture.
I'm merely commenting on, well, call it an unexplored possibility.
Let it remain that, Loken replied firmly.
And in the interim, stay out of my head.
The pair of you quarrel too much.
The comment shot at them from the depths of a hooded cloak over a suit of aged, clanking battle armour. The voice was all too familiar.
Severian?
Loken's eyes widened as the hooded figure revealed his face, showing the craggy, scarred map of all his years to the open air.
I did wonder what had become of you.
You're not to call me that any more,
said the veteran Lunar Wolf.
By Malkador's edict, the man called Severian no longer exists.
Rubio gave a wary nod.
Show us the coin.
What coin? Said Loken.
Reluctantly, the other warrior fished into a pocket of the cloak, and his hand returned with a silver disc, not unlike the ones Loken had seen as tokens of the Davinite lodges in the days before Horus's rebellion.
Name me Iapto,
he said, his breath emerging in a white cloud of exhalation as he rolled the coin between his thick fingers.
They will fit me eventually.
As you wish, Iapto, Loken allowed.
The warrior, whom he knew as Severian, had also been part of the ill-fated pathfinding mission to the War Master's flagship. But he seemed different now, like all of them gathered here. Each of the knights errant was a changed soul. Some, like Loken, had been broken and made anew by the events of the insurrection. Others, like Garrow and Rubio, had been torn from their previous existences and thrust into roles they had never expected. And then there were those like Severian, the warrior they called the Wolf, who seemed to grow to fit whatever circumstance the war put upon them.
He summoned you to them,
said Iapto, looking around.
Do you feel it, lad? This isn't like before.
He raised a hand, fingering the cold air as if it were a tangible thing.
The last apocalypse forms beneath our feet. I see it. Don't you?
He looked towards Rubio, who gave a slow nod of agreement.
We'll be at the end soon enough.
I'm not ready to die just yet,
Loken replied, answering without questioning where the words came from.
No,
agreed the older warrior, turning towards the entrance as Malkador entered the great hall.
But you are ready to die.
Loken followed Iapto's line of sight and saw the sigilite walk doggedly across the baroque mosaic floor of the chamber, ignoring the panoply of simulated history around him. Silence fell, save for the metal clacking of Malkador's staff as he came closer. The great Psyker looked refreshed and renewed, a different man from the solemn and grim one that had travelled back with the knights errant from the White Mountain. Trailing behind him came his tall, waif-like adjutant, and he too was changed, but not for the better. The nervous, wavering energy the man had shown only hours before was gone, and now he seemed a hollow vessel, a fragile mimic of the person Loken had previously seen. Rubio observed the same thing, and muttered darkly under his breath. Loken caught a name. Wintour.
You know that one, he whispered.
I don't think I do.
Rubio's reply was distant and cautious.
This has been a long time coming, said Malkador,
his voice carrying.
But as true as that is, it has come too quickly. What you have heard, what you suspect, it is so. The War Master Horus Lupercal, the turncoat allies at his banner, and the ruinous powers he has made his pacts with, they will be here very soon. The invasion of Sol will rage, and the page will turn to the Siege of Terror in short order.
None of the knights errant spoke, but they exchanged glances, and the same implicit question. Why are we here? Malkador looked from one face to another.
Some of you were recalled in the middle of a mission. Some have been waiting, biding their time.
He paused and showed a cold smile as another armoured figure emerged from among the hololiths.
Others have been following their own paths.
The last arrival, the 10th knight errant, resolved into Garrow. The battle-tarnished gold of his cuirass caught the light of a low sun as he nodded to the sigilite, then found Loken and gave him the same gesture of acknowledgement. But of Helig Gallor, the other former Death Guard, there was no sign. Malkador went on.
I have assembled you here for one reason. Each legionary in this hall is of greater purpose than you can know. Each of you are bound by fate to become titans. In the crucible of the most brutal war the galaxy has ever known, you were tempered. But the duty which lies ahead is of such scope, it dwarfs that conflict.
He paused to let them take in his words.
When we leave this place, it will be to undertake the last orders I shall ever give you.
We will lead the fight to the arch-traitor, then.
The question came from Jotun, who stood with his arms folded and a ready challenge in his manner. He gestured at his face.
Blind the baleful eye.
The sigilite's cold smile returned.
No, that work is destined for other hands. You, my friend, will never raise your axe against Horus Lupercal.
Loken stiffened at Malkador's words, and he sensed the consternation spreading through the other assembled knights errant.
Let me say it clearly, so there is no misunderstanding, continued the sigilite. You believe you are gathered to meet the spear tip of the War Master's invasion. You are mistaken.
Disbelief swirled in Loken's thoughts, and he could not remain silent any longer.
If we are not to take up arms against Horus, then what worth are we?
He cast around, meeting Garrow's troubled gaze and Rubio's hooded glance.
Everything we have done, everything we have become since the first shot was fired in anger on Istvan, all of that has led us to this moment.
Loken took a step towards Malkador, and he saw the sigilite's aspect shift, becoming defensive.
Now the most decisive battle of the rebellion is unfolding, and you wish us to stand down?
The lad is right, said Iapto. If this is some sort of test of our obedience, sigilite, it is a poor one.
Fittingly, it was Garrow who summed up the mood of the gathered warriors.
What if your order is refused?
Then untold trillions of human lives are doomed to vassalage and degradation,
Malkador answered. But his piercing gaze remained on Loken, lancing into his soul.
An eternity of darkness falls across all the stars, and horrors will be unleashed. Things of such terrible dimension that their predations would make the worst deeds of Horus Lupercal seem like the bite of a fly.
His words echoed around the hall with enough power behind them that Loken could not immediately summon a reply. Then finally, mercifully, the sigilite broke his gaze.
I will show you,
he said to them. His words hushed, but their force undiminished.
Look here, and see what fate will transpire if my word is denied this day.
Malkador raised his hand, and every one of the hololiths about the Hall of the Ages crackled and writhed.
What appears next is not an illusion. Rather, it is a window into one of a billion skeins of time where the deed is left undone. Look without flinching, and you will see.
At the Sigillite's unspoken command, the hololithic fields grew and merged into a twisted, flickering dome that enveloped them, blotting out the pillars of the chamber and the ceiling high above. The lambent forms of the historical projections fused into one another, flowing like mercury as figures from long-forgotten wars and distant vistas were repurposed into new forms. And suddenly, they were standing on a ridgeline, staring at the Imperial Palace many kilometres distant, through a battle haze of aerosolized blood and human ash. As Loken watched, the massive majestic keep of the Terran capital cracked from within, as if it were the shell of a gargantuan egg. From the jagged fissures in the donjons and shield walls came floods of black oil, as a dreadful colossus was birthed within. Tentacle-like appendages, as big as battlecruisers, burst out into the tainted air, and the palace collapsed in on itself, bursting with fire and dust as its towers and gardens were torn asunder. Out of the tumbling mountain of wreckage emerged a cephalopod creature, covered in roomy eyes and clacking beaks. It reached for the sky and screamed a blood-chilling birth cry. The scene reformed. Now the blackness of space was the arena, and drifting before them was Terra herself, the wounded globe lit by millions of corpse pyres across its night side. Off to the edge of the shimmering vision, Loken beheld a broken grey hemisphere amid a slick of thick dust and planetesimal masses. It was all that remained of Luna, ripped apart by incredible forces and remade into a lethal ring system of blasted rock. Warships by the thousands fought in this death zone, trading fire from massed batteries of mega-lasers and salvos of cyclonic torpedoes. Then the distant yellow disk of Sol flashed with a sickly shimmer, and in a blink it grew to fill the black sky. The unstoppable wave of a supernova shock front engulfed the remnants of the moon and the dying ember of the throne world, and in the last moment before the whiteout filled his vision, Loken glimpsed a cackling, demonic face at the heart of the fire. And now the images picked up speed, each one changing faster than the one before. Loken saw what could only be the grand capital of Ultramar laid out before him, but the once majestic boulevards of Magnum Crag Civitas were drenched in rivers of crimson, and where the great banners of the 13th Legion had once flown, there were only ragged flags made of flayed human skin. Everything that lived on this world was a slave to the monsters prowling in hell-forged shadows, the few survivors chained for their pain and suffering, alive only so they could be continually despoiled and abused for the amusement of these immortal fiends. Another transition, swift and disturbing with its velocity. The endless night of deep space, and ranged against that backdrop, a flotilla of desperate refugee ships of all kinds, engines flaring as panicked crews attempted to escape. Then the night moved, great jaws as wide as worlds opening. The blackness came alive with a million laughing maws that swelled to savage the ships, biting them in twain, swallowing them whole. Loken reeled. The images were coming thick and fast now, testing his constitution with their dizzying motion. They whirled around him in a hurricane of dire possibility, and everywhere he looked he saw a greater and more profane sight than the last. The unmistakable forms of dead Primarchs, crucified against the walls of a fortress monastery, or hanging, decayed and ruined from a giant gibbet. A demonic mecha engine of immeasurable size, its cogs carved from continents, its gears made from the cores of savaged planets. And at the end, the galaxy itself subsumed into a seething infinite ocean of tormented souls, as the hellscape of the immaterium spilled into real space and transformed this dimension into a wasteland of madness. Then Malkador slammed the tip of his staff into the floor, and all was as it had been. The hololiths moved through their rote loops of history, and the mournful wind among the pillars was the only sound. None of the knights errant spoke. None of them could find the words to pass the sights the sigilite had shown them. Loken knew the images were unreal, nothing more than synthetic creations of light and sound. Was that not so? But he felt sick inside, chilled by a deep inner cold that leached the heat of life from his soul. The things Malkador had shown them were too tangible to be fabrication. Somehow, the sigilite had imbued the hololiths with a reality that made them more than just captured photons and simulated reality.
How can you know these things will come to pass?
Garrow broke the silence, speaking in wounded, unsteady tones.
I know, Malkador told him. I have been there, to those other Wends, my soul barely tethered to the now. I have walked as a phantom in those dark and terrible tomorrows, and they will come to pass unless you follow my word.
What would you have us do?
Said Jotun at length. Malkador nodded and reached into a pocket of his robes, his hand returning with a small drawstring bag made of dark velvet.
The first step is to leave all you were behind. Each of you were severed from your parent legions when you became my chosen, my knights errant. You gave up your birthright. Now you must accept the erasure of what is left.
He walked to Jotun, and the warrior held up a silver coin, similar to the one that Severian, now Iapto, had shown.
You have already taken your new name, Child of Fenris. Now take the last step.
Malkador nodded, and Jotun bowed his head. The warrior wore a handful of charms about his armour, carved things that only a son of Rus could have called his own. With grave formality, he broke the cord that held them in place and threw them to the floor.
I am Jotun, he said. I am a knight.
Beside him, Rubio marched forward and dropped his gladius to the floor, the carved ultima in the hilt catching the light. He looked down at the sword, and then, to Loken's shock, he revealed a coin of his own.
I am Coyus,
intoned the codicier, looking into the distance.
And I am a knight.
The dark-eyed warrior, who kept to the shadows, was next to speak, his new name offering his silver to the air.
I am Iannius.
Iapto,
said the old wolf with a resigned bow of his head. Malkador walked to Vardas Ison and pressed a coin into his hand.
Voice it,
he commanded.
Satra,
replied the warrior, reading the word etched into the metal before sparing Loken a wary glance. His other hand opened, and a tiny jeweled object fell from his fingers, a faceted fleck of bright ruby set on gold pinions.
I am Ogun.
The legionary with sable hair and pale skin was stone-faced as he discarded a string of onyx beads carved to resemble the skulls of avians. Next, the sigilite moved to a hooded knight who had never shown his face and rolled another coin from the bag into his waiting palm.
Never had a true name before.
The taciturn warrior's words were icy. He looked up, studying Malkador.
This will do. I am Epithemius.
Chiron,
the hatchet-eyed legionary carrying a staff, who had been watching them all like a hawk from the very start, now broke his silence to utter that single word, and in that moment it was clear that he would not speak again. Then Malkador was standing before Loken, and the sigilite pressed a silver coin into his palm. It was unusually heavy for something so small. He looked down. The name on the disc was Cryus, and Loken almost said it aloud. The word pushed at his lips, but he forced himself not to voice it. Then he saw that the velvet bag was empty as the sigilite let it drop from his fingers.
Nine names, he thought. Nine tokens.
But there were 10 knights errant standing in the hall. Slowly, all eyes turned towards Nathaniel Garrow. At the far end of the Hall of Ages, a rectangular section of white stone groaned and dust fell from it as it retracted into an alcove. Revealed behind was a passageway, one of the hundreds of undocumented conduits that threaded through the walls of the Imperial Palace into the great building's hidden spaces, known by the few aware of them as the Shrouds. Garrow stood rigidly as the other knights errant began, one by one, to walk by him and make for the shadowed entrance. As Loken crossed his line of sight, the younger legionary gave him a solemn nod, an affirmation of respect between the two veterans. His jaw set, Garrow locked eyes with the sigilite as Malkador approached, and for the first time in a long while, the warrior did not know what would come next. Was this his end unfolding? Keela had told him it was not so, but could the saint be mistaken? Garrow's thoughts turned inward, and he looked back over all the times he had disobeyed Malkador's edicts, tested his limits, and pushed at the boundary of the sigilite's tolerance. Perhaps today he had reached the line that could not be crossed.
"This is as far as you will go, Nathaniel," said Malkador. "The others, their destiny lies elsewhere."
And then he knew.
"You're taking them to see him."
Malkador gave a nod.
"You wondered why I gave you a list of names back at the start of all this. I never told you the reason. Not all of it. I let you infer and fill in the gaps yourself."
"Those men you sent us to find, to bring back."
Garrow looked away, watching the figures in grey troop past him.
"Rubio, the Nemean, Loken."
"And the others? Not all of them are here, of course. Not all of them were meant to be. But there was a greater design in it. Now that plan moves into its final phase."
He looked back at the sigilite.
"So why am I here?"
A kernel of annoyance came into being in the vault of his chest.
"You bring me to this, only to deny me the next step."
"What do you think will happen, Nathaniel?"
"It is in the heart of every true servant of the Imperium to stand before the Emperor and know his will."
In his haste, Garrow had almost said God Emperor, but he caught himself in time.
"How could I not wish to be a part of that?"
"He will not turn his face to you," Malkador said without weight. "Not here. Not today. Whatever hopes you have, my friend, that doorway does not lead to their realization."
He nodded towards the open passage.
"I do not say this to you as a reprimand. I speak in honesty, as you have always done to me."
He smiled thinly.
"After your selfless and devoted service, I owe you no less."
"Not that selfless," Garrow admitted.
Many was the time he had pursued his own agenda under cover of following the sigilite's opaque orders, venturing to places off the map in search of other followers of the Lectitio Divinitatis, and the saint herself. Malkador raised an eyebrow.
"Captain, you know what I am. What I am capable of. Do you really believe there was ever a moment where I did not know what you were doing?"
Garrow scowled.
"You are mighty," he admitted, "but you're not omnipotent."
"True, but I do know people, and I do know you. I didn't need telepathic mastery across the entire planet to see the path Nathaniel Garrow followed. Knowing the kind of man you are, knowing what you believe in, that was enough."
"I've been your puppet all along, then."
"You were never that," said Malkador, affronted by the suggestion. "I have too much respect for you."
The admission was unexpected.
"Indeed."
The sigilite gave a low sigh.
"I have learned through bitter experience that the river of fate can be navigated, even diverted, but never halted. The wise man learns the currents, turns them to his own ends. You, Nathaniel, are being carried down a stream where I cannot follow. There is a duty here, far from where Loken and the others will be taken. You must fulfil it.
Keela.
Her name was there on the tip of his tongue, and Garrow knew that Malkador had to be reading it from the surface of his thoughts. The sigilite drew himself up, his manner becoming formal.
Battle Captain Nathaniel Garrow, I released you from the mantle of Agentia Primus and my command, but you will retain the rank and privileges you have earned. From this moment on, you are free to do what you wish. You may determine your own future.
Garrow took a moment to process the decree.
I am masterless?
Malkador nodded.
I grant that to you, because I know you will be guided by something greater. Your moral spirit. Your noble soul.
He walked forward until he stood at Garrow's side.
I cannot control everything. I cannot account for every variable and possibility in this maddening vortex of war. So I set vectors moving, you see. I encourage, I coerce and cajole. I set others free and hope they find their true path.
He gave him a last nod and stepped through the doorway.
Good luck, my friend.
When Garrow turned to look back across the empty hall, he saw that one figure in grey remained.
Rubio,
he said, then corrected himself.
Koyos.
The other warrior offered his hand.
We haven't always seen eye to eye, Captain, but I wish you were coming with us. It has been my honour to serve in your company. Brother.
Indeed, brother.
Garrow accepted his hand and their gauntlets clanked together.
I hope you will forgive me for what I did to bring you here.
He'd always felt a stab of guilt for compelling Rubio to go against the Edict of Nicaea on Kalth, and against the strictures of his fellow Ultramarines.
Tylos Rubio of the 21st Company would not absolve you, he replied, after a few seconds of silence. But Koyos will.
He released his grip and passed from the hall. The white stone rumbled back into place and sealed the passageway shut, the entrance to the shrouds vanishing seamlessly into the structure of the walls. In the cold vantage of the hall, there was a moment when Garrow experienced a sense of colossal distance, an abyssal feeling of isolation that dwarfed anything he had known before. Without a Primarch, without a Brotherhood, one could say there was no legionary more truly alone than he was in this instant. Then the emotion faded and was put aside. Garrow strode away, one hand upon the hilt of Libertas, as he marched towards the battlements and the war yet to come.
Your purpose does not lie on Terra, Malkador told them.
Loken's mind was still reeling with the import of what had taken place in the Hall of Ages, and he found himself struggling to keep up. Even in his darkest moments, he had dared to hope that there was a greater purpose in all the madness and destruction he had witnessed. But the former Lunar Wolf could never have known it would take this form. The secret passage brought them to another chamber, a spherical space bordered by inky shadows and lined with humming power cores and other complex tech arrays, whose purpose he could only guess at. In the middle of the hollow, a shape of curves and sharp points was hidden beneath a great drop cloth of black silk, the form of it more than three times the height of a line legionary. Servitors with sealed blank faces moved around the chamber completing tasks, clicking at one another as they used echolocation to navigate. Whatever the purpose of this place, Malkador did not wish anyone to see it.
I showed you the deep future. The tomorrow where humanity is lost, the sigilite continued. Soon I will take you to another world, where the foundations of a defence against it have been prepared. You will be the masters of that place. The finest weapons and advanced technologies await you in the citadel. A cadre of recruits, selected from across the galaxy, ready to be moulded into a fighting force like no other. A vault of the blackest secrets and my most forbidden knowledge. All at hand for you to pore over and come to command. He nodded to himself. I will take you to build a legion. Not for this war. Not for any war that the common of mind can comprehend. You will be masters of a knightly order to fight the war that never ends, in the realms beyond the real, and into the infernal.
How can this be done? Said Jotun. An entire legion cannot be forged whole overnight. Even at the greatest pace, it would take generations. Centuries, even.
Correct. And you will have the time you need.
Malkador looked across the group, finding the dark-eyed warrior.
Aeneas, you will lead your brothers in this, and you alone will know when the moment is right to return.
I do not understand, Loken said quietly, his voice carrying through the chamber. All of us have seen the unnatural horrors that breach from the Immaterium. We fought these things in their variegated forms, dispatched them as best we can. Yet you show us a future when that fight has failed, and bid us to change it before it comes to pass.
You seem to understand it well enough from my perspective, said the Sigilite.
Answer me this, Loken replied. If this tragedy is inevitable, if it is, as you suggest, a greater danger than the War Master's Rebellion, how will one legion be able to stop it?
Will it shake your faith in me if I admit to a failure?
The answer did not come from Malkador, but from the air around them.
I hope not. We remain human in some way, yes? Imperfect, even as we seek a way to perfect ourselves.
Malkador bowed deeply to a presence that shaped behind Loken, and the legionary was immediately overcome with an urge to sink to one knee as the voice took form, and the form became a figure, and the figure became...
Rise, my children, said the Emperor of Mankind, an earnest fatherly smile playing across his lips. Rise. I would not have my loyal warriors stare at the ground while I converse with them.
As he spoke, the servitors in the chamber stopped dead in their tracks and dropped to the floor. Only Wintour, the Sigilite's dull-eyed adjutant, remained as he was, gazing blankly into nothing. In the past, Loken had been gifted with the rare opportunity to stand in the same room as some of the greatest Primarchs ever to draw breath, and in those moments he had known what it was to walk among warlords, demigods, and beings out of myth. All that paled to nothing in the Emperor's dazzling presence. Loken could not bring himself to meet the great being's scrutiny, but he could sense it on him, measuring and knowing him in all his fullness. He stole glimpses of a gallant aspect, something elegant and hard as carved teakwood, but noble and forceful in motion. The Master of Mankind's golden armor was a treasure house of elaborately crafted workings, inset with gems and precious metals, yet it moved with him in sinuous flowing action. There was no hint of encumbrance or affectation there. This was a being in total and absolute control of his nature. Loken could find no other emotion but awe to think that, in some small fraction, the blood in his veins bore a measure of the Emperor's great power within it.
I will confide a truth to you, he told them,
beckoning Malkador to his feet as he passed him by.
In the time before the Great Crusade, my inner eye was opened to the menaces unnumbered out in the void. The Xenos, the strains of lost humanity too far gone to rejoin us, the Witchkin and the Mutant.
The air thickened and grew dim. As he spoke, the Emperor moved slowly from warrior to warrior, studying them in turn as a mentor might consider a student on the cusp of their greatest trial.
To defeat those threats, I brought your gene sires into being, and the legions along with them. But there are other forces that crave the destruction of our civilization. Forces I believed were held in check. Loken could barely believe what he was hearing. If the Emperor himself feared these demons, then what chance did they have? And the Legiones Astartes were made to wage war in this universe, not the non-space of the warp. My errant sons. He hesitated, and there was a knife of regret in the brief silence. In their eagerness to unseat me, they have broken a seal and allowed an enemy you were never meant to fight into our reality. The Emperor stared into the eyes of Aeneas, and time seemed to stop. The expression on his face was unreadable, and Loken tasted the acidic tang of psionic force in the atmosphere. Then the moment faded, and he moved on, seeking out the warrior who was now Koios. Although my friend and I have disagreed on much over the centuries, Malkador has been right about more things than he has not. The Emperor examined Loken's comrade with equal intensity before giving the Sigilite a questioning look. Malkador inclined his head, but no words were spoken, and at length the Master of Mankind moved on. It was he who conceived of the need for a new kind of weapon. He who brought me the design for a legion unlike those that came before it. It was Malkador who convinced me that the war beyond this war is coming. Then the Emperor was standing over Loken, and the warrior was robbed of his voice, of everything but the will to stand and accept whatever command his highest lord would give him. I speak of a conflict where the infernal must be battled in kind. Fire against fire, like against like, he intoned. I will have you forge your souls into swords, your minds into shields, if that is to be your fate. The last words echoed through Loken's spirit, as if spoken only to him and no other. An icy claw of doubt seized his heart, and Loken looked down as the Emperor moved away. This is wrong, said a voice in his head. I should not be here. This is not my fate. When Loken let his gaze rise again, there was only the nine of them, the servitors, the Sigilite, and his adjutant. He felt oddly bereft, as if he had lived his life in darkness and briefly glimpsed the sun, only to have deep night fall again. Malkador gave Wintour a command, and the robed man walked stiffly to the veiled shape below the dropcloth. Gathering up armfuls of the black silk, Wintour pulled the covering away and let it fall to the floor. Revealed there was a tall arc of what appeared to be bone. The surface was detailed with alien iconography and iridescent hemispheres that took on a soft, radiant glow as Malkador approached it. The sight of the construct was one more shock among all the others, but still it gave Loken hard pause. "What is that doing here?" he said in a low voice.
"Serving a greater cause," Malkador replied. "Now you understand what is at stake. You have been judged and found worthy." He glanced back at the assembled warriors. "What was given to you is for you only. Consider it a gift, a final word of guidance from the Emperor himself."
Wintour laid his long-fingered hands on the glowing orbs that protruded from the sides of the bone arch, and as he did so, raw power from the battery modules arrayed around the chamber bled into the structure along sputtering cables.
"He shouldn't be able to do that," said Jotun. "Only one of them could."
"Wintour has a purpose to fulfill, just as we do."
Was that remorse, or something else Loken heard in the Sigilite's terse reply? He could not be certain.
"Your servile is not human," said Koios. "He never was."
A faint sapphire glow began to gather in the crook of the arch, and Malkador looked up at it,
the cold colour casting his face with ghostly shades.
Wintour is what I... He is what he needed to be. As am I. As are you.
Thunder cracked around the chamber, and the glittering mote of light grew into a rippling, coruscating ring. As Wintour moved his hands in a complex dance, making glyphs in the static-filled air, the energy effect stabilized into a portal. Through it, Loken could see the hazy image of a smoky, orange-hued landscape, pelted by harsh chemical rains. The rich odor of raw methane seeped back through the gateway.
Titan, said Satre. And the fortress there?
Prepared, as I said.
Malkador took a step towards the shimmering threshold.
It is too dangerous to make the journey by starship, and time is no longer our ally. Quickly now. Go through, and I will show you your destiny.
The group advanced towards the portal, but Loken did not move. The sigilite saw his hesitation and turned back to face him.
Cryas, he began,
but Loken raised a hand.
No,
said the warrior, producing the silver coin.
I had another name once before and it didn't take. I am Garvial Loken. I was born as such and death will know me as the same.
Malkador's expression became stony. The sigilite was not a man who was often refused.
Consider carefully what you say next. The arc of your life will turn upon it.
I have never been more certain of anything, he replied,
and Loken meant every word.
With respect, Lord Regent, I refuse you.
He tossed the silver coin into the air, and Malkador drew it into his clawed grip with a telekinetic pull.
Whatever destiny I have, it lies on Terra, not Titan.
Conflicted emotions passed over the sigilite's face. It would have been a simple matter for the great Psyker to compel Loken to obey him and follow to the distant Saturnian moon. But what righteousness would there have been in such an act? At length the coin vanished into the folds of his robes.
Eight. Eight will carry the day, then.
He looked up at the warrior, who now stood alone on the far side of the chamber.
As you wish, Loken.
Malkador stood silently by as Koyos, Jotun, and the others vanished through the gateway, with Wintour trailing at their heels. When only the two of them remained, Malkador gave Loken a terse nod of farewell and turned away towards the portal.
Horus will destroy you,
the sigilite said quietly, without looking back.
And Cerberus will not save you.
We'll see,
Loken replied, as the thunder cracked about him once again. Garrow's gaze ranged over the walls of the Imperial Palace, past the grand plaza beneath the tower where he stood, down and down across the distance to the Ascensor's Gate and the glowing lights of the Sprawl Magnifican beyond it. To the south and the catabatic slopes, he saw flights of grav carriers moving slowly through the dusk, great chains beneath them carrying the beweaponed ingots of super-heavy tanks out to their muster points. In the western districts, the battle horns of the Adeptus Titanicus formed a distant, ululating chorus, echoing their defiance off the mountain peaks and over city blocks. Garrow could pick them out, shapes as tall as hab towers moving with ponderous pace. Up above, it was an unusually clear sky, slowly gathering in a cobalt shade as the sun fell towards the horizon. The light had a strangely perfect quality to it that was almost palpable. A smile, genuine and human, split Nathaniel Garrow's face. If he dwelt on everything that had conspired to bring him to this point, he might have buckled beneath the weight of it. But none of that mattered now. The past and the path he had walked was sand in the storm, torn away and gone. All that mattered was the next moment, and the next, and the next. His purpose was at hand. It beat in his chest like the double pulse of his heart's. Cut loose and without fetters upon him, Garrow was free to enact the object of his will. He was a weapon of fate now, a blade drawn that never again would be sheathed. He saw ranks of legionaries in the plaza below, in battered power armour the colour of storms. There, at the fore, Helig Gallor led them in weapons drill, and a forest of swords and bolters were raised in salute as they signalled battle readiness. The 70, in name and honour, if not in number, he thought, were prepared to meet the enemy, no matter whose colours they wore. Garrow drew Libertas and matched their salute, holding his sword high by the hilt, with the blade aimed downward.
"Do you accept your role in this, Nathaniel Garrow?" he asked himself the question, whispering it, casting it away. "Will you give your life for the God Emperor and the Imperial truth?"
His voice rose.
"Do you promise to stand in defiance of those you once called brother?"
"It needs two of us to make that formal."
Another figure in grey armour walked to the edge of the battlements and cast a glance in his direction.
"Loken?"
Garrow's eyes widened in surprise.
"How are you still here?"
"I am where I am meant to be," he replied.
"What Malkador wanted,
that was not my fate." "You refused him."
"Do you think he'll carry a grudge?"
"I do not care."
Garrow let out a laugh.
"I am glad you are here, Garfield. Our odds have just improved."
He saw that the other warrior now carried a second sword in addition to his own, a weapon with a familiar golden ultima forged into the hilt.
"That's Rubio's blade."
"Aye,"
said Loken with a wary shrug.
"Seemed foolish to leave it there to gather dust, don't you think?"
He nodded at Libertas.
"Should we finish this?"
Garrow took a breath and closed out the oath.
"Do you pledge to protect the Imperium to your dying moment?"
Then he placed his hand on the weapon, and Loken did the same. With one voice they spoke the affirmation.
"On this matter, and by this weapon, I swear."
As the winds took their oath of moment, the warriors turned their gazes upward. In the new night above them, from across the infinite and the blood-soaked fields of countless battles, distant, glittering pinpricks of brilliant light signalled the fire of vast weapons on the edge of interstellar space. Out there, a million jagged blades of shadow clashed in the darkness, and the promise of a glorious death beckoned.